by the committee chairman to make the airport run. Little did I know what Stan and I were in for. We picked up two of the funniest, most dynamic and fun-loving people that you would ever want to meet. Tom will be speaking tonight at the AA meeting, but now Jenny, Miss Jenny Hewitt, will be speaking for us this afternoon. She's from Tequesta, Florida, and you will see what I mean by dynamic and fun-loving. She has been awesome.
Well, thank you so much. My goodness, Karen.
Excuse me just a minute.
Well, I am the Al-Anon speaker.
My, what a crowd. Look at you. Aren't you wonderful? This is the Al-Anon speaker. Do you know that? And now you're going to get more thought, aren't you? Oh, goodness. Well, I tell you, I stand up here. I have looked forward to you. Let me just say this. Good afternoon, Alatoona Lake Roundup on Georgia. I tell you, I have waited for you. I have waited for you so long. Going on for 27 years. We are sitting here today because of the people who started all of this 27 years ago. We don't know who they, well, maybe we know some of their names, but think of all the people that have gone ahead of us and made it possible for us to be here today. I'm just so psyched. And when I get like this, there is a feeling that comes over me, and there's just one word that I know to explain it, and that word is glory. I mean, it's just glory. I don't know what else to say. I've given up on all those words. It's just glory. And I didn't know how to really express it. I asked a hearing-impaired Al-Anon member, how do you sign glory? And she said, well, she said, it's just that feeling that you kind of get in the bottom of your feet, and it moves up and up and up, and you just feel so good, and you don't know what to do with it, and then it just comes right out your hands. You just clap your hands together, and you say glory. And so I thought, if you're feeling what I'm feeling... And if you're not by now, I would suggest you check your pulse. I mean, really. Good stuff is going on here. Good stuff. Don't you feel it? Don't you feel it? The care that went into planning all of this? What a committee. Amazing. Okay, so now, listen, maybe you didn't have time to do your aerobics this morning, or you've just awakened from a nap, or you wish you were taking one right now. In any case, if you haven't had a chance to exercise a little, and if you're feeling what I'm feeling, we could do just a little. You don't have to stand up, but you just... reach down to the bottom of your feet where that good feeling starts. Oh, come on, it's not videotaped. You can do it. Come on, Ron. Come on. So you reach down. Come on. And you just let it come up. And you let it come up. Come on. Let it come up and you slap your hands and you say, glory. And you just sprinkle it all over everybody. There you go. Glory. Woo-hoo. Pardon me while I adjust my lingerie. We aren't perfect, but So, okay. I better start. Because I'm supposed to talk about what it was like, what happened. Well, it's like now. I lived a long, long time. Look at all this. My goodness. Yes. Now, I have to get a grip. I have to use my Al-Anon voice. This is the voice I use when I'm leading the beginners' meetings so that they'll know how serene I am. And how everything in my life is perfect, and I have everything under control. Hi, everybody. I am a member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Alateen. My home group is in Tequesta, Florida. It's called Freedom to Grow, and they've given me that. And my name is Jenny. I feel at home. Woo-wee. Okay, let's see. The committee. Now, I'm not supposed to mention names, so I'm not going to do that. But I'm going to tell you that Karen and Stan... were there at the airport. Well, sometimes you just have to say things, you know. And they were there, and Tom was there, and they gave me such a warm welcome. And then I got into the hospitality room, and Boots has ruined me with her fudge. And Kay has ruined me with her grits cake, which I can't get enough of. And I'm going home carrying more than I did when I came. Yes, I am. And let's see, and I have a list because usually I just sit down and I think, oh, I didn't thank so-and-so. I had a goodie bag. We all had goodie bags with all that those candies and things and pencils and all kinds of things. And then I received a picture, by a man that is a potter here in the area. I think his name is Dan Cooper. I'm not sure, but I tell you, you have made me feel welcome. That's my point. But anyway, what is all this about? It's to say that I am in Georgia, and I am at home. I am at home in Georgia. My great-grandmother went to Riverside. No, she didn't go to Riverside. That's my godfather, Sandy Beaver of Riverside Military Academy in Gainesville, Georgia. My great-grandmother went to Brenau Academy for Women. My grandmother, my mother, my sister, and I graduated from... I graduated from Michigan State. Yankee! What a lost opportunity. I could have been among all these mood-altering, mind-changing Southern men all these years. What was I doing up there? I don't know. I don't know. So... So, okay, all right. I think that's about it. Although, maybe just one more little thing. Ray speaking last night in that stormy night, and I'm looking forward to Tom. I know that Tom is going to share his experience, strength, and hope in a honest and way that we can carry away many, many new ideas and thoughts, because he is quite a man. And then Neil, tomorrow, I mean, this is going to be fun, so we ought to get to it, right? And it's called... see and share love. I see it here, and you know the sharing. Look, I think there's a woman named Mary who did this. Is this not sharing love? Mary nurtured these little flowers from little seedlings and grew them up. And then when they came to fruition, she cut them and gave them to us. Now, is that not sharing love? I am so touched. Okay, all right. And I think you've got it. If you don't get it, see me after the meeting, because I really have to go. Is it time to close? Good heavens. Okay, so, all right. I was born in the Midwest, and there was no alcoholism in my family, and my Southern mother would put me close to her, and I'd sit at her knee, and she would tell me stories about how my future was going to be. And she would tell me that I was going to graduate from the university, and then I was going to find somebody who would love me, and I would love him. And he would make me happy, and I would make him happy, and we were going to have perfect children. And then we were going to go off into the sunset years together. It didn't happen that way. Any of you heard the same thing? Yeah, well, I'll tell you, it just didn't work out that way. But I did graduate, and I was out on the dance floor in the arms of this older Dutch engineer. He was 6 years older, and at that time, that was a lot. And I was dancing with him, and he leaned down, and he said to me these words, "I need you." Don't tell me you love me. Tell me you need me. You need me. Oh, it was heaven. And I could see his potential. You know, what he needed was a good woman to take off those rough edges. And so we were married, and up the corporate ladder he went, and I was behind him, pushing, just as hard and fast as I could. Well, actually, though, when I think about it, we had a lot in common, because we were both busy leading his life, just his life. That's it. I was, focused on, there he was, I was focused on him. And later on in life, I thought it was like that... that vegetable juice commercial. It was like, oh, wow, I could have had a life. But I didn't know that. There he was. We did have our two perfect children, and we moved to Brussels. That's Brussels is the capital of Belgium, and Belgium, they made Belgium after the Napoleonic War. They pulled down a little bit of Holland, and they pulled up a little bit of France, and they made Belgium, and it's now, Brussels is the capital of Europe now. And there we were, living there, and it was life in the fast lane. And as I say, he was going up the corporate ladder, but he was stressed. And it was really too bad, because we were happy there in that we had everything. We had a lot of stuff. I've had a lot of gods in my life, and money was one of them, because money could buy me stuff, and stuff would make me happy, and we had stuff. But there was just this one little thing I couldn't take away, his anger. And there were three of us in the family, Clarissa, Julia, and me, and we were dancing around this one man. He was our first tradition. I'm going to do like this, and that's a parenthesis. It has nothing to do with what I'm telling you. It's just an aside. But our first tradition says our common welfare should come first. Personal progress for the greatest number depends upon unity. There was no unity in that family. There was one person, and we were dancing on eggshells around him and around him and around him. Now, don't make your father angry. You know, I was a translator for 23 years. I was a translator in the family. I stood between the parent and the child, and I would translate. And I would do things like I'd sit and talk to him, and I would say, now, darling, the girls will do better in their French class, and they will stop seeing those naughty Italian boys. And then I'd go upstairs to their room, and I'd throw open the door of their bedroom and say, now, girls, your father really does love you. It's just that he's under stress, you know, and then downstairs and upstairs and downstairs, and it was total chaos. I could not allow them to have their own relationship. It had to be the relationship I wanted. And so I went through my life a long time before I found you all. Ooh. And so as I say, he was stressed, and so he would have two martinis with before dinner, and then wine with dinner, and then a good cigar and a glass of cognac after dinner, and then he could let those troubles go and just drop off to sleep in his chair. He was passed out. I didn't know that. I didn't see that. He was passed out. My higher power was passed out, and he was my higher power. I knew, you know, you could tell what kind of day you were going to have by the way they said good morning. Yes, I know, I know, I know. And there he was, passed out, and the girls came to me. By now, they were teenagers, and they said, do you think Dad's an alcoholic? I was shocked. I'd seen Days of Wine and Roses and Lost Weekend. I knew what alcoholics were like. And they didn't speak six languages and have 2,000 employees. And this was the kicker. This is what I would say to them. I'm a nice girl. I wouldn't marry an alcoholic. And so, as it said in our promises that were so beautifully read now, I was a slave to my emotions. They were like this, just constant, constant, constant. And I would do things like, you've probably never done this. Slam a kitchen cupboard door, wham, down the hall, to your bedroom, wham, slam that door, throw yourself on the bed, sobbing, 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 clutching your pillow, waiting for the door to open, to be caught up to a warm, heaving chest and hear his voice say, oh, beloved, I was wrong, wrong, wrong. It never happened. The door never opened. My pillow was always damp. It never happened. And I began to get, you know, some resentments about this. And I knew that I couldn't divorce him. I mean, you know, that was really out of the question. I mean, no one in my family had ever, ever, ever divorced. And so I began to think that perhaps murder was a possibility. We'd be out there sailing on the North Sea. You know, the Dutch have to know how to sail because their country's underwater, so they have to know. And my job was to pull up the anchor. So I would just be sitting on the ship, and I would be thinking about my resentments, and I'd be counting them. You know, if he was out of my life, I'd be happy. Look at him, by and by. And he'd be flying around taking tightening winches or wrenches or whatever you do on boats. And I thought, you know, he is the source of my unhappiness, and if I could just get rid of him, that's all I wanted to do. That's just that one person, just... And I'd look around, and there wouldn't be another sail on the horizon. And I'd think, how easy it would be to just bump. Oh, my goodness. Oh, look. Oh, you've fallen overboard. Oh, dear. Oh, look, you're all wet. Uh-huh, uh-huh. Are you cold? Oh, would you like me to come back for you? Just how do I do that? And then I'd sail off. Then I'd sail off. And I'd be happy. I would be happy because, and now I know that this child of God was in the throes of a deadly disease, and he loved me the best way he knew how, but it wasn't enough for me. I wanted to be loved like it was in the movies and in books and things like that, and I know now that he was doing the best job he could, and it wasn't enough. And so he lost his job. And we moved. It's a downward spiral, isn't it? He told me it was a political situation. I believed every word. He was my higher power. Every word from his mouth. Yes, it must have been, oh, that dreadful family. How could they do that? And we came back to Florida, and I began to think, okay, I can't take away his anger, and my job is to do that. And our physical relationship had, it wasn't there, let me just say that. And I would talk to him about that every now and then. You know, I've heard so often in the rooms, there are women who are so afraid their husbands are having an affair. I was wishing mine would. I mean, we had to wake up something. Something had to, you know. It was was very, very bad. And I thought, well, I'm supposed to... Don't ask me how those children were born. I had my head under the pillow. I don't know. I don't know. But I, it was... And so I felt, you know, really that I wasn't doing my job. And this is what... I was supposed to make him happy. And I couldn't take away the anger. So you probably get the picture, and I'm sure you all have been through some sorts of interpersonal relationships like that. And so I was sitting in Yeehaw Junction. Have you ever been in Yeehaw Junction in Florida? And I was looking into the bottom of my coffee cup, and I heard a voice, and it said, "You can leave now." And the relief that came over me, you know, when you make a decision, have you ever suffered with that? Yes, no, yes, no, I'll stay, I'll go, I'll stay, I'll go. 23 years, I'll stay, I'll go, I'll stay, I'll go. And suddenly that decision was made, and there was such a sense of ease about it, right or wrong, I'd made the decision. And so, and now here come these words that sound so simple. I just stand up here on a sunny afternoon and toss out, "And so we were divorced." We were divorced. That's just three words that meant a change in all my morals, my values, anything I'd ever been raised to do. It was my bottom. We divorced. And I packed up my cosmetics and my lingerie and my character defects. I hadn't changed. And I went into a little bachelorette apartment in Palm Beach, and I went looking for love in all the wrong places. I still had those ideas I'd learned at my mother's knee. What I needed was to find somebody to love, and he would love me, and I'd love him, and he'd make me happy, and I'd make him happy, you know. Went looking, not going to tell you where I looked, but I looked on two continents. And I came back from such a trip, and I was sitting in Palm Beach International Airport, and my escort was late picking me up, and I was just watching people go by, and I thought, is he a good father? She's a teacher. Those children happy. And I looked over in the corner of the room, and there was the most handsome man I had ever seen in my life. And I looked at him, I thought, oh, Lord, he must be married, or he's homosexual. I mean, what are your chances? You know? And, you know, that man, he was being greeted by other big men, and they were slapping him on the back, and he left those men, and he walked right over to me, and he leaned over me, and he said, "Haven't I met you somewhere before?" I thought, tacky, tacky, tacky. And then he followed it up with this. Now, if you ever want to meet anybody, he said, "Aren't you in a prayer group in the north of the county?" I thought, prayer group, prayer group. He can't be a serial killer. Now, he's... It has to have something to do with church, and I'd been going to church, and I thought, well, it has to be something to do with church. And so my escort came, and I gave this intriguing stranger my card. I'd been passing it out in Europe, and you know, he called me. Could God shine his face upon me? This is a parenthesis. In a hot airport, you know, just an ordinary evening in an airport, could God do that? Could God, with his grace, give me this gift? That's an undeserved grace, that's what that is. And he did. He brought Bill Hewitt into my life. This man who was my service sponsor before I even knew I needed a service sponsor. A man who was so... And anyway, God moved mightily that night. And so this handsome stranger called, and we made arrangements for him to come to my apartment, and we were going to have dinner and go to the symphony. And he walked in, and he filled up the doorway, and he looked around, and he saw those candles all lighted and the wine glasses all polished. And he said, "Did I tell you I was perfect for the first half century of my life?" "Yes, I was. It was hard. It was hard being perfect. But I managed to do it. 50 years of perfection." So the table was perfect. And he looked around and he said, "You know, Jenny," he said, "I want to tell you something." He said, "I don't drink." He said, "I'm a recovering alcoholic." I thought, alcoholic? I'm going to be attacked. I'm here alone. I'm going to be attacked. And where was my mind? The next thought was, doesn't drink. Well, he can't be any fun. About. I don't know. But we went out and we had a wonderful time, and some days later he said, "Jenny," he said, "now I'm going to be telling my story at a clubhouse, and they want me to tell my story, and it's a big meeting. They're going to have some souses and their spouses there, and I'd like you to come, you know." And I thought, well, if they're going to, you know, the alcoholics can't get me if I'm with Bill, so I'll go with him. And so we walked into a room, everybody's sitting there just like we're sitting here right now, just, you know, chatting away. And I thought, okay, now, where are the alcoholics? They're around here somewhere. And then I saw the doors in the back, and I thought, that's it. The doors are going to open. They're going to be there lying on their cots with tubes coming out of every orifice.
I knew it. And Bill went up to the podium, and he began to talk. And he talked about things that I was speechless. I've never heard people talk like that. And I began to think, I've never heard anybody talk. Why, we didn't talk like that in my family. Then I began to think, come to think of it, we didn't talk about much in my family. You know, we really didn't. And he would say things like, I was the handsomest guy. I had the best tan in the Canary Islands, because I'd go down to the beach and every day I'd pass out face down, some days face up, you know, ha, 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 ha. Good tan, I had a good tan. And people would say, oh, yeah, I did that too, you know. And I began to feel something or hear, I swore I could hear the brush of angels' wings. There was something moving in that room that I had never felt in my family. Now, my family loved me. You know, I got good grades, and if I got better grades, well, maybe they'd love me a little bit more, but I had never felt this. I had never felt this non-judgmental love that I felt in that room. I didn't know what it was. You accepted, Bill. You understood. And when we walked out of there, I didn't know what I had heard or what was going on, but I knew I wanted to be with these people. And so we courted in open AA meetings. And I would sit by him. He had 22 years when I met him. And make notes and talk things over with him after the meeting. Oh, my goodness. Oh, that was a good point. I didn't know what I was talking about. Oh, this is important to say. When I was dating Bill, I noticed that he was the same at the end of the evening as he was at the beginning of the evening, which was very rare for the men I'd been dating. And I thought, if he is not going to alter his mood with a glass of wine or something, I'm not going to either. I don't know when it happened. I just didn't drink anymore, that's all. But I want you to know, if you've never been to an Al-Anon meeting and you're thinking, I'd like to go, but I really don't want to give up my Chablis when I'm playing bridge with the ladies, we don't care. You don't have to give up champagne for Thanksgiving or whatever you're doing. Come on into Al-Anon. You figure out. We're not going to ask you, do you drink? How much do you drink? We're not going to ask you that in Al-Anon. The only requirement for membership in Alcoholics Anonymous is a desire to stop drinking. In Al-Anon, it's, are you bothered by someone else's drinking? We don't ask you about your drinking. You come on in. Listen, if you're sitting there on a hip flask right now thinking, oh, Lord, is she ever going to finish? Or if you've got frozen margaritas in the truck or Bloody Marys in the room, we don't care. Come on in. You and your higher power will figure out where you belong. And I think it's important to say that. So if I close that parenthesis, and just, yeah. And so, I saw Bill's enthusiasm. And he had been shot out of the sky in a B-17 and captured by the Germans and burned and escaped through the Belgian underground and alcoholic. And he had this enthusiasm. And I asked him about it, entheos, enthusiasm, that's Greek God in you. And I asked him, and he said, well, why don't you come up to my church? And I thought, well, you know, I'm really intrigued. I'm going to go to his church. So we started up to his church, and on the way up, he said, now, Jenny, he said, there's something I want to tell you about my church. He said, we clap our hands. Clap your hands in church, big noise. Now, I'd been going to the best church in Palm Beach, you know, and you'd say, good morning, and then I would sit and look at my hands, and I'd think about how naughty I'd been, you know, all week, and then they would start, and then he said, and we don't use hymnals, we flash the lyrics up on the wall. Now, I began to think, well, that could be good, because at my church, they'd say hymn 49, and I'd be going through there trying to find hymn 49, and I'd just find it, and then they'd say, amen. I was never on the right page with them, never. So we went into Bill's church, and the music was playing, and the people were moving in the aisles, and they were hugging each other, and they went from one song to the other, and it was so positive, and I thought, is this supposed to be about joy? Is this what this is all about? And they just talked in a different way and just had this joy. I just couldn't, I had never thought about joy connected with God. Now, I knew God loved me. He wasn't judgmental and you know, keeping lists and mean or anything, but I just didn't know that there could be joy in this. So, let's see, we had, there, you know how it is in all relationships, there was a big quarrel. And I'd been going to his church for some months now, and I found myself back in the bedroom clutching another damp pillow. It'd been one of those, who can get out of the driveway the fastest? I don't want to see you again, that kind of thing. And I was back in my bedroom clutching another damp pillow, and I was crying, but this time I was praying. And I was praying, like I would say things like, oh, what am I going to do? And I thought, well, you can't. I think you learned in church, you know, it's God, it's going to... Okay, God, what are you going to do? And then finally, I said, Thy will be done, and I gave my God a personal name. Now, I can't tell you his name, because he's not conference approved, but his father is. And so that was the night I unzipped a zipper and invited him in. It was like I was sitting at a next to a lamp that was dark, and I just flipped the switch, didn't have to understand how all the electricity went through the wires and got there, just do it. So I unzipped the zipper, invited him in, zipped it up. If you see anything in me about joy or about faith or about, well, anything that's good, anything that's good, that's him, not me, not me. And so I let go of Bill. Briefly, and we were married. Because I knew that night I could live without Bill Hewitt, but I couldn't live without that personal God that I had invited into my life. So we were married, and I packed up my cosmetics, my lingerie, my character defects, moved into Bill's bachelor pad into Cuesta. Poor man. I was on him like a duck on a June bug. I knew what time he got up. I knew what time he went to bed. I knew what he ought to wear. I knew what he ought to say. I knew what he ought to do. I knew what he ought to give. I knew his fears. I knew his drives. I had no idea who I was as a child of God. Absolutely none. I hardly knew my favorite color. Where would you like to go for dinner, Jenny? Oh, well, I don't know. Where do you want to go, you know? Creepers, creepers. Oh, that poor man. It was terrible. It was bad. So we'd go to these meetings, and I'd sit with him in these open AA meetings, making notes, talking about it with him in the car. 3 months after I married Bill, the father of my children walked into that clubhouse where Bill had been speaking while Bill was in his AA meeting and picked up a white chip. You mean that had been it? I had been married to the man for 23 years, and I did not see it. Denial, denial. Don't even know I'm lying. Denial, denial. It's unbelievable, unbelievable. I spoke with my two daughters recently, and... I don't want to get ahead of my story. I'll tell you that later. Don't let me forget to talk to you about my daughters, who were so concerned about their father's drinking. Oh, so let's see now. Where was I? Oh, and so, yeah, John came in and picked up that white chip. I was amazed. Well, by now the community knew that I had been married to a man that I would see drink, but I didn't know he was an alcoholic. And now I was married to a man that I knew was an alcoholic, but I'd never seen him take a drink. So they knew that I was somewhat confused in my thinking. And in those meetings, the Al-Anon members would come over and lean over at me and say, Jenny, we're going to our meeting across the hall. Would you like to come? Oh, no, I'd say. I'm here with Bill. And there I'd be, as I say, on him like a duck on a June bug, and it got really bad. How bad did it get? It got so bad. Finally, one day, Bill said to me, Jenny, he said, you know, you should probably try some of those Al-Anon meetings. He said, those ladies need you. Yeah, I could do that. You know, 3 months, get over there, fix up some of their problems, you know. Could be tough cases. 6 months. Okay, then go back to the open AA meetings with Bill. I could do that. Okay, so. So I went to my first Al-Anon meeting, which was Freedom to Grow. I'm still at that same meeting, and I like to think of that day as the day that God put his foot in the door of my mind and let in just a little light. Maybe there was another way of doing things. Maybe my best thinking. Have you ever sat in a chair? Have you ever sat in a chair and tried to figure something out? Your best thinking. Maybe my best thinking wasn't enough, and maybe I needed your thinking. And so you invited me in, you gave me love, and you gave me some ideas just to think about, like the idea that there is a God and he's not me. What a surprise. And you said I could set down all those responsibilities, all those people, places, and things I had carried around. That huge magnifying glass I had in my hand all of my life. I knew what you needed. I knew what you needed. I knew your fears and your drives. I knew all these things. You should. Why don't you? If you blah, 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 all that stuff you said, set it down. Pick up the mirror and have a look at yourself Whoa, that was scary. I didn't even know how to begin to do that. They said, keep the focus on you. And they suggested I do the Al-Anon warm-up, that I go into the bathroom in the morning and look in the mirror and do this Al-Anon warm-up. Me, anytime I say he, she, it, you, I am in such deep sununu, I don't know what's going on in your head. Why do I think I know what's going on in your head? I don't. It's dark in there. I wander around with my flashlight. Oh, yeah, I know what you need. Yeah, yeah. I don't even know what I need. I don't even know what's going on up here. Why would I start a sentence with you? What do I know? What do I know about you? I don't know anything about you. I'm trying to learn about me. What a revelation. Revolution, too, that was in my life. I couldn't imagine that. Because you were always there. You don't see, I mean, in AA, you see somebody pick up a, you have a slip. Oh, Charlie's having a slip. Oh, really? Yeah, oh, that's terrible. You don't see me with my slip. You don't see that obsession. There he is. How are you, Jenny? Well, Bill, no, Jenny, how are you? I don't know. So there it was. You told me there was another way to think. And so I started on this absolutely wonderful voyage. And I started with these, you asked me for my first service job. You said, Jenny, will you bring the cookies next week? Cookies? Oh, okay. What kind of cookies? I mean, do you have cookies with nuts or raisins? How many should I get? Where do you get your cookies? How much do you pay for them? Listen, does this group have a cookie platter? Have you got any doilies? You said, Jenny, just bring the cookies. We trust you. And you know, you did. You trusted me. And when you come to think of it, have you ever been any place? We can all use so many different gifts. This is the place. Have you ever been any place? Like, for instance, in our hospitality room. Did you ever hear anyone say, who brought those cookies? who made that coffee? No, we're all, thank you for the cookies, thank you for the cake, thank you for putting the tablecloth out, thank you for getting the name tags, thank you for making the sign. Come in to these fellowships. We can use your gifts, no matter what they are. If you can knit an afghan, if you can bake cookies, whatever, if you can raise beautiful flowers to, as the French say, égayer, make a room gay. If you can do that, we need your gifts. We need that. And there's a place for us to come. And I began to trust that, yes, I could do these things. And in our, well, and so, okay, and so then I started. You know, any of you in here alternate, let's see, what do you all say? Alternate general service reps in your group? Alternate? Any alternates? Is there an alternate here? Yes? Oh, good. Do you know what's going to happen? The general service rep is going to move to Pago Pago, and you're it. That's it. They're gone. They go. As soon as you say, yeah, oh, yeah, I could be alternate in Al-Anon at GR, you know, yeah, oh, so I did that. Sure enough, she moved away, and there I was. And I started on that food chain of service, you know, down, down, down the food chain, down, 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 DR, whatever, coordinator, alternate delegate, down, 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 down. Where I met Barbara, we were together as delegates. Panel 34, Barbara was representing Georgia, and I was representing South Palm Beach, or you were 35, yes, 35, and then through Barbara I met Dick, and Dick is serving, I know it's principles above personalities, but I think it's so nice for you, Dick, as delegate, to be here today, and so I just wanted to tell you I love you both dearly. Okay, principles above personalities, don't anybody say anything, just they're here, and I'm glad, because they believe in service the way I do, down, 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 and, Oh, well, you know what it led to? This is so amazing to me. What this led to, I served on the International Coordination Committee at the World Service Office. I found myself on a train, a night train. We had had a conference in Germany, and I was in Essen, Germany, and then I went to Berlin. I went to Berlin on the train, and stayed at the Concept Hotel. Don't you love it? That must have been a God thing. And I was on that train. I went on the night train from Berlin to Amsterdam. Does that sound exciting? Because I said I'd bring the cookies. I found myself... Yeah, well, that's the way it happened. I tell you, I had that door double bolted. I had my raincoat tied tightly. I had my slouch hat down, and I was listening for gunfire the whole time. I didn't sleep a wink. But I went from Berlin to Amsterdam on the night train. Oh, I just love to say that. Oh, Phil, you never know where service is going to lead you. So I just challenge you about that. And I challenge you to a few other things. If you're out there, I started on this wonderful... I have no idea when I began, buddy. Are you asleep over there, buddy? I don't know. Anyway, I started on this wonderful trip in service, and where was I going with that? Oh, I started on the steps, and those first three steps that are kind of, clear up your head. My head was not clear. I didn't know what my responsibilities were. I didn't know how to do anything. I didn't know what to do with my life. I just knew it wasn't working, and something was terribly wrong. And when I got to that third step, they said, don't worry about it. That step, it's no big deal. Don't worry. So here's a little thing that might help you if you're having trouble with the third step. It says, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. Okay. Now, there are three Al-Anon members, and they're sitting out in their car, and one of them makes a decision to come in here and hear the Al-Anon speaker. How many Al-Anons are left in their car?
Three.
That's right, because she just made a decision. She didn't come in. Don't worry about that step. Made a decision. It doesn't say made a decision and turned our will and our lives over. Mm-mm, doesn't say that. It says made a decision to turn. So somewhere I'm going to do it. You are? Well, how do you know you're going to do it? Because it says so. Well, where does it say that? In that last step. Well, what does it say in that last step? It says, haven't had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. The result, the one, the only. It's not a result along with a sober husband and a happy home and pets that love you and things like that. It doesn't say that. The result of these steps is a spiritual awakening. I tell you, I do a beginner's meeting at a treatment center, and the families come in. They are so, it's their first time. They're so lost. And I point out to them that we're using those steps, and so are their loved ones over in the other meetings, using those steps. And the only result of these steps, the result of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, is a spiritual awakening. Glory, hallelujah. And what does that take care of? Everything else. Just come on, keep on doing them. Keep on doing them. And so you just work your way through those steps. There they are. It's clear up and clean up. I had to clean up. Oh, I remember doing my fifth step with my sponsor. Oh, that was, picking a sponsor. Well, anyway, the most unlikely person. I expect you all have the same experience. Most unlikely person in the world, but there she was. And I was talking to her, and she was very wise. And she would say, yes, dear, and what about your rage? Rage? I didn't have any rage. I'm a nice girl. Rage? No, I didn't have any I would take money out of his wallet at night, and things like that, but there wasn't any really rage. Well, I did clean the bathroom with a little rag like this, and I told her I would just clean everything in the bathroom, up and down and on the ground and on the floor, and then the last thing I would do would take his drinking glass off the shelf, and I would wipe it out, and I would put it back. There was no rage in me, was there? No, no, no. No, no, couldn't be. Oh, dear, so, and then grow up. Let's see, clean up. Yes, I did. And grow up. And if you, our logo is a triangle, right? The three-sided triangle. So if you're out there and you've done your steps and you're thinking, oh, well, okay, things are going to get better and they're not getting better, and you're wondering, why aren't they getting better? You might want to consider another little side of our steps. She said, when I'm through with the steps, I ought to look at the traditions. Now, your sponsor might say, you don't need those things. Keep it simple. You don't need that. Well, then you can just pray for your sponsor. That's what... And I challenge you, it's not anybody else's job to give me this program. It's my job to go after it. And I wanted what you had, and I wanted all of it. So I just challenge you not to deny yourself the traditions and the concepts. Those beautiful traditions, as that first one that I quoted, our common welfare should come first. My welfare has to come first. It's like dominoes set up on end. If I'm not the best Al-Anon member I can be, or the best child of God that I can be, then I'm not a good anything. I'm not a good mommy. I'm not a good this. I'm not a good that. It's my welfare has to come first. And, you know, I have to have that... Well, okay. I'm sorry. I'm preaching to the choir. You know what? I am. Because you know who you are. You know who we are here. We are the people who care enough about our programs to give up a weekend in order to be with other people who care enough about their programs to give up their weekend. Now, are we the winners? Don't tell me. Oh, there aren't any winners. There aren't any leaders. Oh, yes, they are, and we're sitting right here, and I'm preaching to the choir, so I'm going to get off that maybe for a while. And let's see now. Okay, yes, the service and the cookies. Yes, 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 yes. Oh, my goodness, look at that. Yeah, oh, gee, well, okay. So what we're getting down to is me learning to protect my integrity. And so I had to do my... You've heard the three C's. I didn't cause it. I can't cure it. I can't control it. You know? That's the three C's. Okay. And then there are the four G's. Get out of his head. Get off his back. Give him to God. And get to your meeting. And then these eyes, these beautiful eyes. I had to take my inventory to find my identity in order to protect my integrity. I didn't know what a boundary was. I had no idea. And I remember the first time that I practiced a boundary. I'm getting well in the program. I'm not all the way well, but I'm getting there. I'm getting there. And I had cooked a fish dinner, and I had set up the table on the patio, and I had called Bill onto the patio to have dinner, and I don't cook well anyway. I'm not going to go into my personality, but let me say it was quite something for me to cook that flounder, I'll tell you. It wasn't easy, but I did it. I make reservations. So now Bill came in and he sat down, and so we cut into our fish, and I was cutting into my fish, and I heard this voice, and it said, "The fish is cold." Whoa! Right to my heart. I thought, oh, his fish is cold. Now, normally, in the old days, I would have jumped to my feet. I would have shit all over myself. Oh, I should have done this. I should have kept it warmer. I shouldn't have done that. I should. I would have run into the kitchen with the offending flounder. I would have said, "Given me the keys to the car. I'm going to go get a steak. I'm so sorry." Just all over myself. But now I'm beginning to think now. And I thought, now, wait a minute. What was that? He said his fish is cold. Okay, was that a question? No, that wasn't a question. Do you have to answer that? No, you don't have to answer that. Don't look at him. Well, what was that? It was an opinion. That's right. Okay, what'd you hear? Are opinions facts? No, opinions aren't facts. Okay, opinions aren't facts. Okay, now, wait a minute. What was that motto you were sitting in front of at the meeting today? It said, what did it say? It said, think. Okay, think. Now, let's see. Don't look at him. All right, now that thing that was in the Forum magazine, what did it say? That little stopper, that little joke, it said, don't just do something, sit there. Okay, don't do anything. Just sit here. Sit here and think. All right. Now, try to figure out. It says his fish is cold. Okay. Now, who's the leader here? Let's get out of personality into the principle. Who's the leader here? Now, let's see. That is tradition 10. Service responsibilities are carefully defined, and double-headed management is to be avoided. What's he trying to do? That's double-headed management. Who's the leader here? The leader is you. You're the leader. You cook the fish. Okay, what's that? What's concept three? The right of decision makes effective leadership possible. Okay, you're the leader. You have a right to make a decision here because it makes you an effective fish cooker and an effective leader. Okay. So he thinks his fish is cold. His fish may be cold, but my fish isn't. I use the Al-Anon O, and I turned to him, and I said, oh. You could be right. Yeah. Well, that certainly bears thinking about. Yeah. Thanks for sharing. So I was getting well. After Bill and I had been married 5 years, Parkinson's came to live in our house, and Bill was a Parkinsonian, and he was such a remarkable man. I told you that he was such an influence in our lives. I know that the father of my children would never thought of joining Alcoholics Anonymous, but he knew that Bill Hewitt was a gentleman, and if a gentleman could join Alcoholics Anonymous, then he could do that. And so that was there. And then my daughters, who were so bothered by their father's drinking, called. One night, Clarissa called, and she said, "Bill, she used to come into the meetings in Philadelphia with her bottles bought at the state store, because if she didn't get the bottles then, she couldn't get them after the meeting. So she'd walk into the Al-Anon meetings with her bottles clinking in this brown paper bag, lift up the tablecloth on the literature table, put her bottles under there, and there was always a picture of Lois Wilson looking at her, you know." she said, no, I don't feel comfortable in my Al-Anon meetings. And he said, honey, why don't you try those meetings across the hall? And so she did, and a month later her sister joined her. And they have 12 years in the Fellowship of Alcoholics, because Alcoholics Anonymous, because you were there. You were there and the lights were on. And in particular, and I don't want to embarrass anybody, and you know you don't have to do anything, but I just want to ask, are there any women alcoholics here that would just raise their hands so that I can thank them for being there? Oh, Glory, thank you. Thank you. You were there when my daughters came in, and they had a place, a safe place to go, where they could talk about the things I had no business knowing and could never have understood. But you all were there, and you gave them a place to heal. And I am so grateful to you for healing my daughters. So there. Yes, so then that happened. And then I went back to school. Bill with his Parkinson's, it was... I had him like this. It was bad. You know, I'd go into the meetings. They'd say, Jenny, you didn't cause it. You can't cure it. You can't control it. Let go. Let go. Let go. Let go. Let go. It's easy once you know. You never could. You never would. Let go. Let go. Let go. Let go. Let go. You know. You never could. You never would. Let go. Let go. Let go. Let go. Let go. And so the only way I thought to let go was to get out of the house. So I went back to school and got my master's. It took me 3 years. And I know that it was the right thing to do. And I got and the only reason I mentioned that, somebody might be sitting here thinking, well, I'm 38 and I'm too old to go back to school. I graduated in 2000. If I can do it, you can do it. And that was the year that Bill died. We had wonderful times in that when he was in his wheelchair the last 3 years. He was Harut, and he was very tall, 6'6", and I could put my nose in his beard when we would dance. But now in the wheelchair, we'd go to the VA and the elevator doors would close, and I'd be able to lean over and give him a hug and kiss him, and oh, it's just heaven. You find a way, don't you? I found a way to dance with a wheelchair. You just find a way. You put your foot in one foot in front of the other, one day at a time, 1 hour at a time, and you do what you've got to do. And I love that man, and he knew that. And he died 3 years ago at 8:15, and I was with him. And in Palm Beach County, the meetings start at 8:30. And a friend of his, Dana, had died the month before, and I know Bill died at 8:15 because he knew that Dana would be waiting for him in the parking lot, and they could go into the meeting together. I just know that. And it was this. We had a celebration. We didn't say, "Oh, Brother Bill is gone. Oh, he's gone." We said, "Thank God, Bill Hewitt was in our lives. Glory." We just thanked God for that. So that's just a matter of attitude, isn't it? Everything changes in here. God grant me the serenity to accept you just as you are, the courage to change myself, and the wisdom to know that's all I can do is change what goes on in this little battleground. It's not everybody out there that's upsetting me. It's this little space. So, okay, let's see. Well, I think that's it. And I wanted to close with these, I'm going through this talk now. I went through the one before I got up here. Now I'm going through the one here, and then I'll sit down. But you know, God just gives me the words to say, and I want to thank you for telling me that. Good enough is good enough. So I'm going to close with this beautiful Al-Anon closing that we use at every meeting around the world. And just another thought. You know, when I was talking about that idea of the maturity, grow up is maturity. And I wanted to, part of being a mature person is trying to be the best Al-Anon person I could be. And part of that was breaking the buck barrier. Now this is a parenthesis, don't anybody leave, the doors are locked anyway. But you know, I had been waiting for my group to say, well, you know, when is this group going to start putting $2 in the basket, or even $1.50, that would help. When are they going to do that? And I'd sit, when are they going to do that? When are they going to do that? Why don't we do this? And I'd be putting that dollar in there, and then I'd stop at the 7-Eleven and slap down $1.50 for a bag of M&Ms that I'd scarf down on the way home. Didn't think a thing of it. Or put that dollar in there, oh yeah, or that dollar, and then go out to lunch with the girls. You know, ha ha, what fun. And I began, I think it was when I was on the International Committee, I began to realize the people that don't have the literature around the world. And I know we can say, oh, well, it doesn't have to come from my dollar because we can just pray about it. No, we can't do it with smoke and mirrors. Because of you all leading us into China, we now have two Al-Anon groups in China. You know, how could the Russians couldn't print their literature without us. How would you like to work for a place and have your whole pension and your whole life depend upon the sale of a few books and what somebody drops in a wicker basket? That's what our staffs are doing up in the World Service Office. That's where their money comes from. And so I was lying in bed, I'll get to the point of all this, and that statement of responsibility came to me. When anyone anywhere reaches out for help, let the hand of Al-Anon and Al-Ateen always be there, and let it begin with me. And so I put $3 in my home group. I'm not asking you to give up your butter and egg money. You know that. We'd never ask that. But a small sacrifice, I could never outpay. I've given time and money and fortune and everything to Al-Anon. I could never. They don't owe me a thing. I still owe them. I could never pay them back. And so I'm just telling you what I do. Just think about it. Maybe a dollar quarter, you know. And isn't it fortunate that Bill and Lois weren't born in Helsinki? Can you imagine? We'd be sitting here waiting for the translations from Finnish to come to us in English so we could have our books. No, we're born here. Our literature's in our language. We're not sitting in some tent in Afghanistan waiting for it to come. We have our literature in 24 different languages now, including Urdu. Don't you love that? Urdu? I don't know what it is. It sounds like a perfume. Urdu. I didn't know Urdu. Hidrit. Oh, so I want to say that just because I'm up here and I get to say it. And so that's the end of that growing up and being mature and being responsible for Al-Anon. And that is all part, as I said, of growing up. And so now I'm going to close with this, and that's what got me on this. This is the closing that said, whether you're sitting on the sand, whether you're sitting under a tent, whether you're sitting with no electric lights, no heat, no air conditioning, no chairs, no matter where, just maybe one little piece of literature, wherever you're seated or standing or doing what you can do to have an Al-Anon group, it only takes two people, wherever, they say this closing, and it's just about 10 or 11 sentences. In closing, I would like to say that the opinions expressed here were strictly those of the person who gave them. Take what you liked and leave the rest. If you thought I spoke too long or too fast or you didn't like the way I laughed or whatever, leave that here. Don't worry about that. But if you heard anything about joy or faith, take that home with you and put that under your pillow tonight and think about those things. Take what you like and leave the rest. The things you heard were spoken in confidence and should be treated as confidential. Keep them within the walls of this room and the confines of your mind. And a few special words to those of you who haven't been with us long. Is there anyone here for their first, any woman here for her first roundup? Anybody here for the first time? Yes, and may I have your name? Gail? Gail, you and I could go and have coffee after this meeting, and I could say things to you, and we could talk about things that I couldn't even talk to my sister about. And you know what, Gail? We would understand each other, because we'd be speaking the language of the heart. That's the thing. Isn't that beautiful? I'm glad you're here. So a few special words to those of you who haven't been with us long. Whatever your problems, there are those among us who have had them too. And if you try to keep an open mind, you'll find help. You'll come to realize that there's no situation too difficult to be bettered, no unhappiness too great to be lessened. You will find joy. Remember those promises? We will laugh more. You know, we will. This program works. We have to tell our faces. Have you ever had anybody come up to you and say, listen, would you like to go to my Al-Anon meeting with me? It's really helped me. You should see what I used to be like. You know? I don't think so. We have to tell our faces. Come on, this thing works. To those of you who haven't been with us long, no unhappiness too great to be lessened. And here come my three favorite words. We aren't perfect. They could say we aren't beautiful, we aren't funny, we aren't happy. What do they say? In every Al-Anon meeting, we aren't perfect. The welcome we give you may not show the warmth we have in our hearts for you. After a while, you'll discover that though you may not like all of us, you'll love us in a very special way. the same way we already love you. So talk to each other, reason things out with one another, but let there be no gossip or criticism of one another. Instead, let the love, understanding, and peace of the program grow in you one day at a time. I'm going to speak slowly because I'm going to have to sit down. Grow in you one day at a time. And so now that feeling's coming back. And you know what? It's just joy that at last I got to be here in Georgia, that I got to be with you at Allatoona Lake, the roundup, and I got to be in your company. And the only word that comes to my mind, here it comes, glory. And thank you. Thank you.